Well, good morning. Welcome to week two of the Intelligent Design. If you weren't here last week, I'd encourage you to check out the podcast. We've got a podcast online that you can subscribe to or just go listen to it straight from our website each week. But we are in week two of the Intelligent Design. For those of you guys that have been with us 2 weeks in a row, I'm glad you're back to dive into the creation account even more. And again, if you weren't, I'd encourage you to go listen to it on podcast so you can continue to engage in what it is that we're doing over this next five-week series that we are calling the Intelligent Design. My goal and hope is that you guys engage this morning. And so if somehow you snuck in this room without a Bible or a pen or a bulletin, or maybe you wanted to pick up a highlighter or something from that, raise your hand. One of the student leaders would love to bring you whatever you need. But I'd love for everybody to have those objects with them this morning, as it's important, as Jessica said, that we would engage. This is a series where we're going back to page number one in the book of Genesis. A series that, again, as a group, you guys have asked for at the end of last year of saying, hey, we want to understand the creation account more. So this is a five-week series where we're going to do exactly that. The first half of the series, which we currently find ourselves in, is where we're going to talk about creation. What happened in those first 6 days? Last week, we kind of broke it apart, and we had Alyssa come in and draw us this incredible painting of the first 6 days of creation. And we're going to jump into creation even more this morning. And then next week and the following week, we're going to talk about the creation of humanity. Who are we and what in the world is our role? And then the very last week in this series, we are actually going to become the artists. And we're going to have a review and a response and a celebration service where we are going to then interact with creation ourselves and reflect back on the series and start to ask the question of, what does this have to do with me? So I'm excited that you guys are here and a part of this series. Well, hey, I want you to test yourself. So I want everybody to take out your bulletin, grab your pen, open up to that inner little spot that Jessica walked you through as she gave you a tour through the bulletin this morning. And I want you to test yourself on week number one. So week number one, we asked the question, who created the heavens and the earth? I don't want this to be a place where we just come in and hear. I want this to be a place where we come in and learn. On Sundays, you get to learn by engaging and hearing from me and sometimes other guest speakers. On Wednesdays, you then get to get into small groups and you become the talkers. You get to discuss with other people. You get to search for truth and engage in truth together. But as you look back to last week, we talked about who created the heavens and the earth. We broke the creation account up into two different segments, into 6 different days. And so what I want you to do is I want you to go to your Bibles, to Genesis 1. You can use this as a cheat sheet if you'd like. In Genesis 1, God answers the question. The question of who created the heavens and the earth. This is one of life's biggest questions. The question that people have been asking since day one. Who created all this? As we look up into the stars, as we see the sunrise and the sunset, as we see the oceans, as we feel the ground under our feet, the question is, how did this all get here? I have an iPhone in my pocket, and I know who created this. It's an incredible design. Steve Jobs was behind this phone. But the world that we live in, that we care for, that we get food from, who created it? Well, there's lots of answers out there, but the Bible gives an answer. The Bible in Genesis 1:1 says, God created the heavens and the earth. Now, what we'll be talking about more today is that the right answer? Is it the wrong answer? Is it a possible answer? But Genesis answers that. And then we kind of see in the rest of Genesis 1 through 25, we see a summary in chapter 1 of the account of creation. And so what I want you to do now is I want you to go on your bulletins, and I'm going to give you a minute, and I want you to fill out the creation summary. I want you to test yourself of what were the two segments that we kind of split up his creation account to. He did two things. Days 1 through 3, we see this idea of something that he did. Then days the end of day three through day six, we see that he did something else. And then test yourselves. Do you know what he created each day? Let's take a minute. God is the master artist. It says in Genesis 1 that the earth was formless and void and empty, that there was darkness and there was water, and that God's spirit was hovering over the water. God was like this artist who was sitting in front of a blank canvas that was formless, with all these paints and paintbrushes in front of him. And he's looking at all of his material that he has, trying to figure out, what am I going to paint? What picture am I going to draw? And we see that at the beginning of Genesis 1. And then as God sits back, he takes the darkness and the water, and what does he start to do? He starts to organize. That God organized his paints. He organized his darkness and his water. He did that in three different days or three different steps. He did that first by the day and night. He organized the day and he organized the night. He organized the dark and he brought in the light. Day two, he then took water from water and created a vault above to hold water above that he called the sky. Then he continued to organize in day three and he took the water below and he started to move the water below to different sections, rivers, lakes, ponds, and out came land. In day three, land was created. And then God said, okay, I've now organized my materials. Now I want to add. Now he looks at his artwork and he says, okay, I've got the darkness and the light, the waters and the land, but this picture isn't good enough yet. This isn't perfect enough yet. I'm not finished yet. I want to start adding, creating some things. So what does he do? Well, the second part of day three, step three, he adds in vegetation. And then after he adds in vegetation, he looks up into the sky and he adds in the sun, the moon, and the stars. I imagine him looking back and seeing this big dark thing and saying, okay, I got to make this prettier. He says that there's two main lights, a lesser light to govern the night, which is the moon, and a greater light to govern the day, which is the sun. And then I like to think that he just tacks on the stars to just be that much prettier and cooler and creative. Think about sitting out at night and just looking at the Milky Way or the constellations. God is this master artist. And then day five, he starts to add things into the sky and into the sea. He says, I want to put birds in the sky and sea creatures into the sea. Anything from the whales to dolphins to little anemones to starfish. He starts to add creation. And then in day six, he goes back to the land and he adds in your woolly mammoths and maybe even your dinosaurs. He adds in your wolves and your anteaters and your insects and your centipedes. Just watch the animal planet and all those things he added in on day six. And one of the cool things we talked about is that not only did God add in vegetation and birds and sea creatures and land creatures, but do you know what all these things have in common? He created creation that keeps creating. That he created vegetation with seeds and fruit that bear seeds and plants that bear seeds so that they continue to create. He created animals and said, I want you to go continue to create more animals with each other. He created creatures to say, I want you to continue to reproduce. It's not an artwork that he painted, stood back and said, cool, awesome, it's done, and walked away. It's an artwork that he painted and is continuing to paint and create every day. Isn't that awesome? I found that so cool as we were going through it last week, that we have an artist and a creator who continues. Well, what I want to do in week two is I want to look at this account again. But I want to look at it through the lens of God as the intelligent designer. That when we look at this, and when you really step back and try to look at the creation with new eyes, like, here's what I want you all to do. I want you all right now to picture the most incredible piece of nature you've ever seen. Maybe a sunset, maybe a sunrise, maybe at the end of a hike on the top of a mountain. Everybody shut your eyes for a second. Shut your eyes and take yourself to that place. Try to re-picture the most beautiful piece of creation you've ever seen. Walking down on the beach during sunset. Maybe you were on a cruise and you were out at the end of the boat at the middle of the night and you saw a billion stars. Find that. Sit in awe of that for a second. Ask yourself, is God the intelligent designer? Did this need an intelligent designer? We think of how cool and crazy our iPhone is, or the airplane, or the telephone, and we know there's a designer behind that. But what about what you're thinking in your mind right now? Is there a designer behind that? Now I want you to think of the craziest, coolest looking animal you've ever seen. Maybe in person, maybe on Animal Planet, maybe one of those birds with like seven different colors, maybe an iguana that changes color, maybe a fish that is like, looks like Flounder from Little Mermaid. But with your eyes shut, I want you to picture that animal. Maybe it's the centipede that is like crazy. I look at that and I'm like, that's insane. Maybe it is the woolly mammoth, just this huge, gigantic beast with these big horns. Maybe it's the monkey with the red nose. Maybe it's a frog. And sit and stand in awe of that for a second. And now open your eyes and look back at week number two on the board. And let's assume that God is that intelligent designer. That so often we just think of animals or we think of creation, but when we really look at the gorgeousness, the beauty of it, it's magnificent. Paul says that we find God in creation, that one of the ways we know God is real is by looking to creation. When you go back to the very beginning, as God will see here next week, starts adding in humanity, the way that people knew there was something greater is because they sat back and they looked at the creation and they saw these animals and these huge trees and the jungle and the sun. And they thought, there's no way this is on accident. And so what I want to do this morning is I want to sit with this account, but I want to sit with this account in a different set of eyes. And I want to sit with this account away from the Bible. So I want to take our Bible. So everybody take your Bible, hold it up. It's kind of a symbolic act that we're going to do here for a second. Okay? And I want you to put your Bible underneath your seat and just say, bye-bye, Bible. And what I want to do this morning, which is pretty unique for our youth ministry, is I want to actually set the Bible aside for the morning. And I want us to look outside of the Bible, and predominantly, I'm going to be grabbing from a book this morning called I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist. If you are more interested in what we're talking about this morning, I've got about six of these left back there in the back. If we run out of them, I can buy more for you, or I can even kind of copy or highlight the chapters that we're going to be going through or that I'm going to be pulling from. I'm going to go very high level this morning because there's a ton to talk about. But what I thought was important is not to just teach about the account, but to teach about the account and then ask you guys the question of, okay, the Bible says this is an answer, but is it true? So it's one thing to give an answer. It's another one to figure out if the answer is true. So Bible says in Genesis 1, God created the heavens and the earth. And it gives the story of how he did it. He did this day one. He did this day two. He separated this. He added this. He brought in this. The Bible answers one of life's biggest questions. How in the world did we get here? Is there a designer behind it? Is it accidental? Is it not accidental? The Bible gives an answer. But now I want us to take this week, both this morning and Wednesday night in small groups, to sit and say, do we actually believe it? When I got to college, I went into my freshman dorm room. My roommate's name was Ben. He was an interesting dude. I had a Jewish guy to the right of me. I had a gay guy to the left of me. I had a couple atheists across from me. And we all became amazing friends within the first 2-3 weeks of college. And I started sitting down and having awesome conversations with these guys of, who are you? Who are you? What do you believe in? What do you believe in? Where'd you come from? Tell me about your family. All these incredible things. And in the course of 2 weeks, more than I ever thought, I started getting questions about my faith. And these weren't hostile, you're wrong questions. These were just like, so Chad, what do you believe in? Cool, you went to church. What does your church believe in? Oh, cool, you read the Bible. Tell me more about the Bible. And I soon realized, like, I know what I believe in. I don't really know exactly what it is. And I don't know exactly why I believe it. And I remember Ben in particular started like asking really good questions of like, okay, so you guys believe in like this virgin lady giving birth, right? Yeah, no, we believe in that. And you believe in like that God created all the stars and everything, right? Yeah, no, we believe in that. Doesn't that kind of sound weird though? Like, can someone really get pregnant without having any sexual interaction? Like, isn't that like impossible? That goes against science, right? And doesn't like something coming from nothing go against science too? So like, how would that all get created? And God's like eternal, like that doesn't really make sense to me. And so as a freshman in college, I started asking these awesome questions of like, man, do I really believe that this is true? I get the answer. I get what the Bible's saying, but is this actually true? You guys following me? So that's what I want to do this morning, is I want us to now say, okay, great, we read it, we see it, we hear it, we've got this really cool, rad artwork to kind of help us with it, and now I want to step back, and again, like I said, I'm going to take most of the arguments that we're going to go through this morning from this book. I'm going to go high level, so I would encourage you that if you're really interested in this stuff, let's talk more. We're going to dive into it more on Wednesday nights, so if you don't come on Wednesdays, you need to come on Wednesdays, because this is where you get to now discuss. You get to now with other people seek an unknown truth and figure out if you think and if this is real on your own. So Wednesdays are key to this whole thing. Okay, so here's what I want to do. Take your bulletins out if they're still not out. Get your pen ready if it still isn't ready. And I want us to walk through this because I want to present three of the strongest arguments showing the universe had a beginning and has an intelligent designer. So what I want to do this morning is present three arguments that are the arguments that Christians will use. Now, again, it's up to you if you think the argument is right or wrong. And we want to be people that search for truth, not what we like, not what we don't like. There may be truth that we're like, oh my gosh, yeah, that's true. And we might not like it. We're not searching for what we like or think, or we're searching for truth with logic, reason, and science. What is true? And that's what I want to use this morning. I want to use science and I want to use logic. And I want us to sit back and say, could this possibly be true? And so I want to introduce you, some of you have heard these arguments before, of three of the strongest arguments showing that A, the universe had a beginning, and B, that the universe had an intelligent designer. That not only did it just have a beginning, because some answers will say that it's always been, but that there was an intelligent designer behind the beginning. Okay, so journey with me. Argument number one is called the cosmological argument. And do you mind helping me in the back there, John? My clicker's not working. Oh, got it. Thank you. The cosmological argument. So let's go through this. The argument from the beginning of the universe. If the universe had a beginning, then the universe had a cause. Now, I'm going to break this down to make more sense because this is confusing even to me. But the cosmological argument is the argument from the beginning of the universe that says if the universe had a beginning, then the universe had a cause. It looks like this. Everything, this is where you need to use your logic. Does this make logical sense? Everything that had a beginning had a cause. Now, you think about that for yourself for a second. Now, for some of you, you may be stretching your minds a little bit this morning and be like, oh, this hurts. I don't want to think this hard. This is Sunday. I just got out of school on Friday. But is that true? Everything that had a beginning had a cause. The universe had a beginning. Therefore, the universe had a cause. Okay, now to help us think about it as our minds are hurting, I'm going to ask to get those lights off, and I'm going to turn us to a video that is going to help us understand and think through the cosmological argument. This is one of the strongest arguments Christians will use that there was a beginning. Can I go back to that? All right, here we go. Let's watch this, see if this helps.
Does God exist? Or is the material universe all that is, or ever was, or ever will be? One approach to answering this question is the cosmological argument. It goes like this. Whatever begins to exist has a cause. The universe began to exist, therefore, the universe has a cause. Is the first premise true? Let's consider. Believing that something can pop into existence without a cause is more of a stretch than believing in magic. At least with magic, you've got a hat and a magician. And if something can come into being from nothing, then why don't we see this happening all the time? No, everyday experience and scientific evidence confirm our first premise. If something begins to exist, it must have a cause. But what about our second premise? Did the universe begin, or has it always existed? Atheists have typically said that the universe has been here forever. The universe is just there, and that's all. First, let's consider the second law of thermodynamics. It tells us the universe is slowly running out of usable energy, and that's the point. If the universe had been here forever, it would have run out of usable energy by now. The second law points us to a universe that has a definite beginning. This is further confirmed by a series of remarkable scientific discoveries. In 1915, Albert Einstein presented his general theory of relativity. This allowed us, for the first time, to talk meaningfully about the past history of the universe. Next, Alexander Friedman and Georges Lemaître, each working with Einstein's equations, predicted that the universe is expanding. Then in 1929, Edwin Hubble measured the red shift in light from distant galaxies. This empirical evidence confirmed not only that the universe is expanding, but that it sprang into being from a single point in the finite past. It was a monumental discovery, almost beyond comprehension. However, not everyone is fond of a finite universe. So it wasn't long before alternative models popped into existence. But one by one, these models failed to stand the test of time. More recently, three leading cosmologists, Arvind Bord, Alan Guth, and Alexander Vilenkin, prove that any universe which has on average been expanding throughout its history cannot be eternal in the past, but must have an absolute beginning. This even applies to the multiverse, if there is such a thing. This means that scientists can no longer hide behind a past eternal universe. There is no escape. They have to face the problem of a cosmic beginning. Any adequate model must have a beginning, just like the standard model. It's quite plausible then that both premises of the argument are true. This means that the conclusion is also true. The universe has a cause. And since the universe can't cause itself, its cause must be beyond the space-time universe. It must be spaceless, timeless, immaterial, uncaused, and unimaginably powerful. Much like God. The cosmological argument shows that, in fact, it is quite reasonable to believe that God does exist.
Now, how many of you in this room have ever heard of the cosmological argument before? Okay, a handful of you. So this is one of the strongest arguments that shows the universe had a beginning and supports the case for a theistic God. So hopefully that video, did that help a little bit? And so what I want us to do is, again, I don't want us to just be people that just read something in the Bible. Because when I went to college and sat down with my buddy Ben, and he said, what do you believe and why do you believe it? I can't just say, well, I believe it because the Bible says so. But when I look at Ben and say, well, I believe it because it's true, now I've got a different foot to stand on. And now I can talk to him with the Bible under my chair and say, hey, have you ever thought about the cosmological argument before? Or have you ever gone to Albert Einstein's theory of the second law of thermodynamics where it proves that there was a beginning to something? And now a conversation has started. Does that make sense? Okay, number two, as you're following along, the teleological argument, also known as the fine-tuning argument. The precision with which the universe exploded into being provides even more persuasive evidence for the existence of God. This evidence is technically known as the teleological argument. So what we're going to start looking at here is, this is kind of how the argument breaks down. Every design had a designer. The universe has highly complex design. Therefore, the universe had a designer. Now, let's just get really simple. But if you look at the painting from last week, who would believe that this did not have an artist behind it? None of us, right? Logically, if I came in here and said, hey, this is really cool. Nobody painted it. Nobody created the canvas or the paint. It's just here and it's really pretty. All of us would say, no, this is too complex. The coloring, the brush strokes, the ocean, like all, there's no way. This complex design must have a designer. And the teleological argument is one of the better, strongest arguments for having an intelligent designer or a divine designer. So I want us to watch another video that will break it down and explain it even better than I can to continue to get us thinking. Now, here's what I want us to do. Again, I want us to think this morning. Most of us in this room have grown up in the church. Not all of us, but a lot of us. Most of us have never chosen to believe in this or not. We have just believed it because it's what we've grown up with our whole life, and it's made sense and things of this sort. And so a lot of us in this room, I want you to challenge yourself this morning and ask, is this really true? And that's what I found myself doing my first year at the University of Oregon, is saying, okay, I know the creation account. Do I really actually believe there's an eternal God who's always been, who always will be, who sat back and created this beautiful thing? Do I really believe that there was a God who took this young 13-year-old woman, put a child inside of her without any sexual interaction, and that she gave birth to the Son of God, who is fully God and fully man? These are things that we just take sometimes when we step back. It makes sense that to my friend Ben, that would sound a little silly, right? How can a woman get pregnant who has never been intimate with a man? Well, if you believe that there's a designer and a God, then that can make sense a little bit more. But you've actually got to go back to the creation account of, is there an intelligent designer? If there is, then it actually makes the Mary story somewhat easy. And so I didn't even start with Mary. I went back here and said, okay, I've got to look at the intelligent design. I've got to look at the design of creation. Okay, let's watch this to talk about the fine-tuning argument and see if this will make sense a little bit more.
From galaxies and stars, down to atoms and subatomic particles, the very structure of our universe is determined by these numbers. These are the fundamental constants and quantities of the universe. Scientists have come to the shocking realization that each of these numbers has been carefully dialed to an astonishingly precise value, a value that falls within an exceedingly narrow, life-permitting range. If any one of these numbers were altered by even a hair's breadth, no physical, interactive life of any kind could exist anywhere. There'd be no stars, no life, no planets, no chemistry. Consider gravity, for example. The force of gravity is determined by the gravitational constant. If this constant varied by just 1 in 10 to the 60th parts, none of us would exist. To understand how exceedingly narrow this life-permitting range is, imagine a dial divided into 10 to the 60th increments. To get a handle on how many tiny points on the dial this is, compare it to the number of cells in your body, or the number of seconds that have ticked by since time began. If the gravitational constant had been out of tune by just one of these infinitesimally small increments, the universe would either have expanded and thinned out so rapidly that no stars could form and life couldn't exist, or it would have collapsed back on itself with the same result: no stars, no planets, and no life. Or consider the expansion rate of the universe. This is driven by the cosmological constant. A change in its value by a mere 1 part in 10 to the 120th parts would cause the universe to expand too rapidly or too slowly. In either case, the universe would, again, be life-prohibiting. Or another example of fine-tuning: if the mass and energy of the early universe were not evenly distributed to an incomprehensible precision of 1 part in 10 to the 10 to the 123rd, the universe would be hostile to life of any kind. The fact is, our universe permits physical, interactive life only because these, and many other numbers, have been independently and exquisitely balanced on a razor's edge. Wherever physicists look, they see examples of fine-tuning. The remarkable fact is that the values of these numbers seem to have been very finely adjusted to make possible the development of life. If anyone claims not to be surprised by the special features that the universe has, he's hiding his head in the sand. These special features are surprising and unlikely. What is the best explanation for this astounding phenomenon? There are three live options. The fine-tuning of the universe is due to either physical necessity, chance, or design. Which of these options is the most plausible? According to this alternative, the universe must be life-permitting. The precise values of these constants and quantities could not be otherwise. But is this plausible? Is a life-prohibiting universe impossible? Far from it. It's not only possible, it's far more likely than a life-permitting universe. The constants and quantities are not determined by the laws of nature. There's no reason or evidence to suggest that fine-tuning is necessary. How about chance? Did we just get really, 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 really lucky? No. The probabilities involved are so ridiculously remote as to put the fine-tuning well beyond the reach of chance. So, in an effort to keep this option alive, some have gone beyond empirical science and opted for a more speculative approach, known as the multiverse. They imagine a universe generator that cranks out such a vast number of universes that odds are life-permitting universes will eventually pop out. However, there's no scientific evidence for the existence of this multiverse. It cannot be detected, observed, measured, or proved. And the universe generator itself would require an enormous amount of fine-tuning. Furthermore, small patches of order are far more probable than big ones. So the most probable observable universe would be a small one inhabited by a single, simple observer. But what we actually observe is the very thing that we should least expect: a vast, spectacularly complex, highly ordered universe inhabited by billions of other observers. So even if the multiverse existed, which is a moot point, it wouldn't do anything to explain the fine-tuning. Given the implausibility of physical necessity or chance, the best explanation for why the universe is fine-tuned for life may very well be it was designed that way. A common sense interpretation of the facts suggests that a superintellect monkeyed with physics and that there are no blind forces worth speaking about in nature. The numbers one calculates from the facts seem to me so overwhelming as to put this conclusion almost beyond question. There is, for me, powerful evidence that there is something going on behind it all, It seems as though somebody has fine-tuned nature's numbers to make the universe. The impression of design is overwhelming. The heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands. Day after day, they pour forth speech. Night after night, they reveal knowledge.
When I started answering these questions, and when I started learning these arguments, which this is one of the strongest arguments that proves the universe has an intelligent designer who created it from the beginning. When I started learning all this in my dorm room through books like this and More Than a Carpenter, which are back in the prayer room as well, we have tons of those, so feel free to grab them, things started to come alive. I started to sit for the first time and think, oh my gosh, this stuff could actually be true, and it changed everything. The last point that I want us to bring up, which is kind of 1 point or 5 points inside of one, is the third argument I want to talk about in your bulletins this morning is, in the beginning, there was a great surge. In the beginning, there was a great surge. And I list on your bulletin, for those of you that grab this book, the page numbers so that you can look at these things. And again, if we run out, I can grab more of these for us. But in the beginning was a great surge. Now, what I want to do is, SURGE stands for an acronym, and again, I'm not going to break all these down this morning. I didn't want to take 3 hours and go super geeky and make our minds totally blown and have to think super hard this morning, but I did. I feel like as your youth pastor, it's important for me to not just share things with the from the Bible for us, but to actually then sit here and say, hey, and this isn't as dumb or stupid as it sounds, but science and logic and a lot of smart people out there, way smarter than me, for the last so many years, actually sit back and are like, no, there's actually good science and logic that can prove this. I'm assuming a handful of you will jump into a college one day that's not a Bible-believing college. And that a handful of you will sit in front of a philosophy professor or a science professor that will totally try to debunk what you believe. Trevor Lawrence, the junior high pastor, went to UCI. This was just 4 years ago, not that long ago. He's in a class, philosophy class. First day of the class, the professor says, if you are a Christian, raise your hand. About 10 kids, Trevor says, raise their hand. Professor looks at those 10 kids, maybe out of 60 kids in there. This is at UCI, down the road, not that long ago. Trevor's in this class. Professor says, my goal by the end of this class is for you to recognize how silly your Christian belief is, and that by the end of this class, you will no longer be a Christian because you'll recognize it's not true. Professor says that. Trevor comes back. He was working as a junior high leader at the time. Comes back. Now, luckily, Trevor knew that resources and arguments and things like that were out there, which a lot don't. Now, he didn't have the teleological or cosmological argument or any of these things memorized, but he knew the resources were there. So he went and he studied. By the end of the semester, the professor, last day, 16-week class, has all 10 of those kids come up on stage. I can't believe that we get away with stuff like this. Has all 10 of those Christian kids from the beginning stand up on stage. And one by one, he gives them the microphone. He goes, I want you to tell me now if you're still a Christian. Trevor said out of the 10 of them, him and his buddy were the only two that still claimed Christianity. He said that he stood on stage and watched 8 other college kids who 16 weeks earlier called themselves a Christian stand there and actually denounce their faith in front of an auditorium of students. And so my goal as a youth pastor is that I want you guys to know when you encounter that, even in high school, I want you to know there's answers out there. I'm still learning them. Science wasn't my greatest thing, so my mind kind of sometimes hurts too after stuff like this. But I feel like it's my duty to at least help us understand that there are great resources that when we get challenged, we can actually say that, no, I believe in God because it's true, not just because the Bible has told me so. So In the Beginning was a great surge. This is an acronym that you can help. A lot of the students who have done apologetic trips with us before have used it. These are five lines of evidence showing the universe had a beginning. Again, I'm just going to list these. We're not going to break each one of these down, but I want you to know that there's not just the teleological and the cosmological argument. There is a ton of other stuff out there, and not just science, but philosophy and logical and reasoning arguments as well. But here's five lines of evidence. Second law of thermodynamics works in our favor. The universe is expanding. Radiation from the Big Bang, which we heard a little about in some of these videos. Thing called great galaxy seeds. And then Einstein's theory of general relativity that we talked a little bit about this morning as well. And I want to leave us with this. And this is the quote that we're going to talk about on Wednesday night in small groups. Albert Einstein says this, and I want you to think about this as your thought of the week this week before you get into Wednesday night. Albert Einstein says, science without religion is lame. Religion without science is blind. As Christians, when we go to the Genesis 1 account, we look at the answer that the Bible gives to the question of who created the universe. Where did we come from? The Bible gives an answer. And I am arguing and encouraging, based off a lot of smart people and a lot of science that is out there, that science and reason can completely prove the Genesis 1 account. What I want us to do this morning is I want you to put everything out of your hands. I want you to get comfortable in your seat and shut your eyes. I'm going to ask the worship team to come on up. John, I'm going to ask you to get this light off, but keep the can lights on for me. And before we jump into worship, I want us to worship through listening for a second. So I want you to shut your eyes, and I'm going to reread the Genesis 1 account to us. We've now sat with this account for 2 weeks. You've seen a piece of artwork get drawn about it. We talked about some high-level science and logic this morning, that this is actually could actually be true, that this isn't just a fairy tale. This book is different than any other book. This book is inspired and written by the same guy that painted that. So I want you to shut your eyes, and I just want you to sit in this. I want you to hear this story again this morning, and then we're going to close in worship. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now the earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. And God said, let there be light, and there was light. God saw that the light was good, and he separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning the first day. And God said, let there be a vault between the waters to separate water from water. So God made the vault and separated the water under the vault from the water above it. And it was so. God called the vault sky, and there was evening, and there was morning the second day. And God said, let the water under the sky be gathered to one place, and let dry ground appear. And it was so. And God called the dry ground land, and the gathered the waters he called seas. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, let the land produce vegetation, seed-bearing plants and trees on the land that bear fruit with seed in it according to their various kinds. And it was so. The land produced vegetation, plants bearing seed according to their kinds, and trees bearing fruit with the seed in according to their kinds. And God saw that it was good. Then there was evening, and there was morning the third day. And God said, let there be lights in the vault of the sky to separate the day from the night. And let them serve as signs to mark sacred times and days and years. And let them be lights in the vault of the sky to give light on the earth. And it was so. God made two great lights, the greater light to govern the day, and the lesser light to govern the night. He also made the stars. God set them in the vault of the sky to give light on the earth, to govern the day and the night, and to separate light from darkness. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the fourth day. And God said, let the water teem with living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the vault of the sky. So God created the great creatures of the sea, and every living thing with which the water teems and that moves about in it according to their kinds, and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. God blessed them and said, be fruitful and increase in number and fill the water and the seas and let the birds increase on the earth. And there was evening and there was morning the fifth day. And God said, let the land produce living creatures according to their kinds, the livestock, the creatures that move along the ground, and the wild animals, each according to its kind. And it was so. God made the wild animals according to their kinds, the livestock according to their kinds, and all the creatures that move along the ground according to their kinds. And God saw that it was good. Heavenly Father, creator of the heavens and the earth, God, thank you for your design. God, for your intelligence. Lord, for who you are. God, as we sit with the creation account this morning, God, would you give us what we need? That some of us in this room this morning have maybe heard this story 1,000 times, but have never really sat back to ask the question, is it true? Is it possible? Does science prove it? Does logic prove it? Or are we just believing something that's silly? God, maybe some of us in this room have always just assumed that the story was false. Maybe some of us have heard the story a lot, but we're in the season and we've been in the season. Maybe a teacher or a friend or maybe even a TV show has made us think twice. And maybe we came in this morning believing that this actually is all really silly and that science and logic don't prove it and that, God, you don't exist. But maybe this morning, some of us in this room are challenged to maybe go back to the drawing board, to maybe take one of these books home and to maybe rethink a little bit. God, I believe wholeheartedly since my freshman year of college, when I went back, when I was challenged by Ben and other roommates, God, when I started to uncover these arguments, Lord, it was one of the coolest times of my life to sit and say, God, you're real. And God, I hope that a lot of us this morning make that connection. Maybe some of us in this room, something clicks in us this morning for the first time that maybe today is the first time that we decide to put our faith in you. Maybe some of us have been coming and hearing. Maybe it was even at Hume this summer. Maybe this morning is the time for us to just say, God, I surrender. God, you're real. Be with us as we worship you through song this morning. In your name, amen.